Okay, thank you. This is August 13th, and we're on Article 1, starting verse 75. I'm going to have somebody read three verses. Michael, could you read those?
Sure thing. I do have a little bit of a cough, so I think I'll be okay though.
Okay, 75 through 77.
Everybody knows as soon as a child is born here on this earth, he needs care and love. When, however, they are abandoned or lose their parents to death without having any close relatives to take them in, then they are deprived of these cares. Tiny eyes that wander through the immensity, empty of the emotions and full of loneliness, is what they become, uncertain of the future, unaware of the affection of a family. Poor souls who carry the torture of the disaffection from their parents and of their fellows who abandon them in shelters. As the only humanitarian reference, they have aunts and uncles who dedicate themselves to caring for and guiding them. Without that, my children, who are your children, live in fear of tomorrow, in emotional despair, thrown into orphanages. Being that most of the time they remain there until they reach adulthood, they end up in the end without any reference before the society that awaits them. And with that, they fall into perdition, addictions, thefts, and prostitution. And there are still those who are already out on the streets under the cold of night, surrendering themselves, yet still small, to all sorts of human maleficence, and thus numb their senses with any kind of drug, with the purpose of relieving the weight of so vile and cruel reality which involves them. To these, neither a home rehabilitates them, but a strong organization that can rescue them through faith, repentance, and baptism for the regeneration of their lives in me, Jesus Christ. This organization, should it not be my church? Would I want that I could divide with those that report themselves to me, the Lord, as being the general authorities of my house, when in my bosom I feel bleeding the feelings that afflict them for the reason of being a God, and to hear from these little ones their cries to heaven for help in the face of the moanings that come from their afflictions. When therefore I designate to them among their fellow men an organization that represents my name among the sons of men, that would do something from me, Jesus Christ, but which in the interim they do not. I would like that you would hear these little children in their prayers, more true and more sincere than any last thing I have ever sought doing. Sorry. Again, I get tears every time I read this.
You can pause. I can finish off.
Thank you.
Please, God, if you really exist, tell me, please, why I was abandoned. Please tell me that I don't need to be afraid that I will still have a family. I want to be normal like my peers, have a father and mother to go to school with them. I know that it is of no use asking because I've asked several times. I wanted to have a family by Christmas. Very tender. Comments?
Michael, I appreciate the sincerity in your heart. I feel the same way when I read this.
Yes.
If you guys would indulge me in a moment, I would like to read verse 75 in a different way. I know sometimes the language, translation, and where the words end up in the sentence structure. And so I've changed it a little bit, and I would like to read it in this way. Everybody knows as soon as a child is born here on this earth, he needs care and love. When, however, they are abandoned or lose their parents to death without having any close relatives to take them in, then they are deprived of these cares, tiny eyes that wander through the immensity, empty of emotions and full of loneliness, is what they become. uncertain of the future, unaware of the affection of a family. Poor souls who carry the torture of disaffection from their parents and of their fellows who abandon them in shelter. Torture because the only humanitarian reference they have are of aunts and uncles who dedicate themselves to caring for and guiding them. Without that, my children, who are your children, live in fear of tomorrow, in emotional despair, thrown into orphanages. Being that most of the time they remain there until they reach adulthood, until they end up, in the end, without any reference before the society that awaits them. And because of that, they fall into perdition, addictions, theft, prostitution. Then there are still those who are already out on the streets, who are still small, under the cold of the night, surrendering themselves to all sorts of human maleficence. And their senses become numb to any kind of drug, with the purpose of relieving the weight of so vile and cruel reality which involves them. These children, a home will not rehabilitate them, but a strong organization that can rescue them through faith, repentance, and baptism for the regeneration of their lives in me, Jesus Christ. This organization, shouldn't it be my church? The time I read this, I could think of several things. We look at what the government is doing today across the world. I don't know much about it, but in America, it sort of feels like it's become a government versus Jesus. And we know this is a spiritual war. I'm wondering if anybody has an idea how many different areas were covered here in the kind of children that ends up from birth to adulthood, what they go through, being a child or a teenager or a young adult, and kind of see if anybody can put into words this area. Where are these people put in, and why is it that Satan has such a easier time getting hold of them? And why is it that Jesus wants us to present opportunities of love and affection for these children? And how does the sealed book, the sentiments of the love that we're given to share, how does that fit into these children and the purpose of this particular message?
I don't know if you've seen the movie Sound of Freedom, where it talks about rescuing children that are captured and put into prostitution and so forth. It pointed out that there are more people in slavery today than there ever was in human history. It's just appalling what's happening. And the men who have taken upon themselves to try to defeat these crazy people, it's just amazing that they've been moderately successful, but they're just millions.
It's almost like it's growing exponentially, and that is why I said Satan seems to have an easier ability to persuade people who find themselves in this situation. Anyone want to say why?
Well, he's the this is his domain, basically, this earth. We're here to be tested and tried and overcome. But yeah, it's a mess out there.
Yes, it's a very bad situation. It is really, if you really dive into it and you look at all the news and all the things, it is really, really bad. But it is also our job to not stay in that feeling. It is good to have those feelings, but it's also it should also be a catalyzer for us to work harder to what our goal is, our common goal. And try not to, because it's too big for us to give a solution now. So yeah, we can do what we can do. And well, maybe the place of refuge, you know, we can organize something that can be a place for children. I don't know, but you have to start small, because what is going on now, it is not good. But it's a lot of power the adversary has. So yeah, but we also have a lot of power. So be positive and yeah, notice that it exists. But yeah, don't dwell on it or something, you know, or don't, yeah. But I found it amazing that you rearranged this verse, Jeannie. It's wow. It's yeah. It did not cross my mind to do that, but I also understand as it's hurting to read it. Yes, but like I said, it's also yeah, it also takes a lot from you. So be careful. I think this is how I deal with it. Try to be positive, and if you meet a child, be friendly, and yeah, and maybe together we can do something to make it better in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's
those were my thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it points out that the church should be doing something, and the larger the organization of the church, the better, as far as being able to do something. I think we can look and see that the churches that are organized now are not doing near enough. And I think the problem we sometimes have is we think that I'm a member of an organization, I'm a member of this good church, so I don't have to worry about some things. The church is going to take charge and going to tell. And we forget that it really falls back on us individually. We still have a responsibility.
Russell, I was sitting here thinking about, because I'm like, Michael, I can't, it overwhelms me. But I think about what has happened. In the first place, how are we so blind to this enslavement and entrapment that it comes as a surprise to us, that the gravity and magnitude? Is this not like the sealed book? The Lord has come back, and he has sent his angels, and he is restoring his church, and he's come in the building, and he's turning on some lights, and he's called out those things that were with the sacrament and the many things, that the ordinances. And here is revelation being given about what's going on. And we hear through these movies about the dark societies and the dark. This goes right to the root of our government, and through all these conspiracy things that people are talking about, a lot of them seem to be coming true. Nobody before was like, no, that can never happen. That's it. That never happened. He would never do that. But to me, it feels like that old adage about growing. Usually it's going to involve some pain. We're going to have to change the way we look at it, the way we see it, the way we hear it, the way we respond to it, if we expect to get different results. And it doesn't necessarily mean we need to continue in suffering, because that most often is optional if people will do something about it. And I heard a commentary the other day briefly on the way to work. They were talking about this subject about the children. It's so big. Where do you start? What do you do? And the Lord says, this organization, shouldn't it be my church? And it's like anything tough anywhere else. Or as one of the old sayings were, how do you eat a whale? You know, one bite at a time. But you've got to start somewhere. But to try to talk about this stuff, when you could feel its truth, you know, like kids are the only real victims. Everybody else usually has their part in something that gets them. These guys didn't have a choice. So I don't know if I'll be much help reading.
I want to say hi, Suzanne. Glad you're able to join us. I have also thought about the sealed book. Steve, thank you for bringing that up. The sealed book teaches us that we have to have the love. That's one of the sentiments, and we're learning, we're growing. Brother Bob gave us that wonderful lesson on love is not an emotion. So when it was going through this part here about what happens to them, what they end up doing in adulthood, I looked up perdition. And what I found, it said, perdition is a state of eternal punishment into which a sinful and unpenitent person passes after death. We've all read books, seen movies. It's been very much blatant to us that one of the things these children grow up and want so much is to know why they were abandoned. And some of them cannot ever wrap their heads around that. And that's, I think, what perdition means and why it's included. I might not be right. But and we think also of how Brother Mauricio has talked to us about the LGBTQ community. Are we supposed to be learning that as these children grow up, facing everything that now is worse in the world than it used to be, that they have emotional problems that is brought out into adulthood? And are we maybe supposed to have a greater understanding for people not knowing what their background is? I think there's two sides to the issue. There's the tiny eyes that your heart goes out to, and you can't imagine the hurt. And then the ones that grow up without the love, without somebody's arms around them, searching for why are they different and lonely and left. So maybe as we change ourselves from within, we're doing more of what the Lord's asking us to do. And then we can take one bite at a time out of that whale. Because we can't do it by ourselves. But imagine how these children, if they just grow up with someone loving them, and even seeing them on the street or in somebody's home, give kids a hug. Kids need hugs. They need a lot of hugs.
Well, you have to be careful with that also, of course.
Kids don't want to be broached.
Yes, but I understand what you are saying. But we also have to keep in mind that these experiences also molding these children, which later become adults. And if they that there miracles can happen, you know, even during bad situations. You can have very special moments if you're in need, and then a prayer is answered, because it does happen. That is a faith-building experience. So it is also, these children are being prepared for the news of the gospel, I think, also. So there's also that side of it, I think, we have to keep in mind.
Okay, Baki, would you like to read the next verse, 78?
Yes. The majority, due to losing their parents before the age of 8, remain with the image of their father as a very loving man, and their mother as being a caring woman. And, however, they revolt with everyone. These, in general, have a very painful childhood due to their constant absence. Their emotions are hardened because they need to deal with the sadness of life without the warmth of their mother's lap, without their father's shoulder, or of someone that would bring them comfort and guidance. He finally ends up blaming me and ends out of sorts with my father. Yes, but that is a result of this. Yeah.
That's the real tragedy, is how it affects their spiritual growth and how they visualize the world. It's just puts them, you know, we think about how we grew up and we have a foundation as a family, and yet they have nothing. They have done that foundation. And so they start out hating, being upset. I'm going to read the next four verses. They deal with the church. They kind of go together, even though there's four verses, but says, I am always faced with these resentments. Although the church has become one of the most powerful institutions among the children of men, they do nothing to correct the course of this human misfortune on earth. There are still exist over 150 million abandoned children worldwide, from whom the blame is it? Of these, 20% are on the street without shelter, food, dignity, and we still don't see any speeches of General Conference about this worrying situation of abandonment of the incapable. Yes, my representatives, who are your representatives, cover the sun with a sieve. After all, what can they do about it, since politicians do little? When the question should be, what can a child do to change his reality? In the last times, many children stayed aimlessly and abandoned at random as a result of wars and together. Due to religious intolerance, many of these orphans, products of genocide among your peers, accompanied not only by the torment of these human atrocities, but they suffered from the death of their parents, are victims of abuse. I'm sorry, I'm realizing I should have stopped just in two verses. That's where we're into a different topic a little bit after this. This talked about the church, most powerful institution, and yet they aren't saying anything about it. They seem to shield from dealing with it. Any comments?
Well, it says that they act like politicians, the leaders act like politicians, and I think that's a good analogy. You know, politicians are trying to, I mean, what's a politician trying to always show a good side, always, you know, appeal to two sides of, you know, people. And, you know, their hands are kind of tied. I don't know. I think about that too. So.
Lisa, would you like to read the next two verses, 81 and 82?
Yes. In the last times, many children stayed aimlessly and abandoned at random as a result of wars, and together, due to the religious intolerance, many of these orphans, products of genocide among your peers, accompanied not only by the torment of these human atrocities and by the suffering from the death of their parents, are victims of abuse from those who take advantage of their incapable situation, in which ill-intentioned people exploit their smallness and consequent fragility to obtain illicit gains. Girls below the age of innocence being forced into true sexual abuse, who after such obscure and diabolical mistreatment themselves report to me, the Lord, asking if I really exist and why I did nothing to save them. Yes, the general authorities and political partners of the church that bears my name to the knowledge of the whole world are not oblivious to the situation, which is why they make efforts, but only in the sense of offering the minimum, when the aim of affirming to the world, with the aim of affirming to the world that they do something to help. However, this support is not enough, as they should take the full responsibility of protecting them.
What would that look like for a church to step in and take the full responsibility? That's kind of an amazing possibility.
Yeah, I thought about it because when I was active member, I was always a bit proud. And if there is a disaster, like the Red Cross is there and the LDS Church is there. Usually, it would be awesome if they go to a place like Ukraine. For now, I know a lot of children are being taken away there. To go there and set up, a place where the children can come and they are really safe. Because you also have to have good people, you know, because a lot of people have bad intentions. We've seen it with the LDS Church and the scouting, all the lawsuits are now coming, already were there. So you think you leave children to good people and then they are not good people. So yeah, that's also a problem, of course. So first you also need good people who don't take advantage of the situation. So that would be awesome for a, what is it, a trillion or billion, I don't know, milliard dollar church to set up something like that in those places also. So that would be how that could look like, I think, Russell.
Yes.
Or I think in here somewhere it says too that, you know, if each of us just took one child into our homes, you know, like if the prophet said, you know, everyone adopt one child, you know, that would be huge.
That's the thought that keeps going through my mind, is if there's so many good people in all these churches, if the leaders would just say, take one child, that would take so many. I know I would have, and I know my brother and sister would. And I just think we just needed a little direction with this, just a directive behind this, because just having a foster baby in my home, it made me realize that the state kind of owns you when you have taken on a responsibility. You don't get to make decisions for that child, the state does. And so it kind of turned me off from all of that, because you have no, you lose your rights when you try to help a child. And so I just think if it would have came from the top, and I'm not blaming, but it's clearly states in the book that if they would help us, we could help eliminate this problem by a large percentage. So I agree with you, Lisa. If everyone would just take one. I wish I would have learned about this when I was a lot younger.
So Valera, are you saying that the having a foster child or being a foster parent is one thing, but if you'd adopted that child, that would have been a world different, and you would have actually had a positive influence, much more positive influence.
Yes. The child was taken out of our home because of unnatural reasons that we knew was from the dark side, because the mother had not completed any of her case plan. And it was traumatizing for us because we knew she wasn't doing the case plan. So we kind of thought we were safe. But then a judge just said, you know what? The child belongs with the mother. And now that child is back in foster care in another state. So it's just weird how the system is not there to really help the child. And once you realize that, it kind of freaks you out because you're up against a massive entity of dark. So we would have loved to adopt it.
Brother Bob, you had some good suggestions last week of what kind of things could be done. And I think, Valeria, you hit it kind of really well. When I first joined LDS, I realized they had this whole section, part of the church that would help you adopt a baby or was encouraging to unwed mothers to put their child up for adoption. But it was never like brought to the forefront. They never talked about it a lot. It just kind of went to the wayside. And if you weren't in that situation, you didn't hear anything about it. Valera, I'm like you. I'm amazed at the stuff that goes on in the government paperwork when a child is being either put into the system or taken from the daughter or, I mean, from the mother. It's very difficult. And the cost is terrible. So maybe exactly like you said, the help needs to be brought forward.
I keep wondering, what are we supposed to do with this information? I keep thinking, is it just that one little bite at a time? Do we pray to know where to take this information or what to do with our lives to help at least one child? It's so big that I just think I've got to just keep praying for direction right now, because it's cool that this information is coming out. It's there, black and white. The church could have done more, but now what do we do with this information? And we know we're not supposed to be in a state of blaming others, but I just keep thinking, what are we supposed to do right now? And I think what Valky said is true. We just have to pray to know small things right now, but hopefully this will lead to something huge, a solution for a relief for the children.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, just a couple comments. Just reflect on what it means to have all things in common. The City of Refuge, United Order, this is what this society will be like, all things in common. And I think we're all have the resolve today that in this society of the United Order, there will be no homeless children. If something happens and a parent dies, well, then the child will be taken care of by another family, or, you know, as the group. And so I can see what the Lord's plan is. We have to make sure we don't let that happen in this holy place, this place of refuge. But there's another thing I wanted to mention. You know the difference between sin and iniquity? Someone explained it to me one time. He said, sin is sin, but iniquity is when you don't do anything about the sin and it perpetuates. And so what we have actually is iniquity in the church in this regard. That this is obviously something that needs to be addressed, and we have not, it's still a problem today, and so it's persisted. And if you noticed I want to talk a little bit about the Fountain of Living Waters, and as a means of ministry that, the RLDS didn't have a relief society. They had women's department meetings and so on, but they weren't anything like the Fountain of Living Waters supposed to be. That the Fountain of Living Waters is like equal to the priesthood. Let me say that. That as that ministry grows, this is the part of the church that has really been missing. And the Lord is placing a lot on the development of the Fountain of Living Waters. And you remember in one of the revelations, it said that the Fountain of Living Waters sisters are to remove iniquity from the church. Do you remember that? Okay, it's in one of the, and so if you consider this situation iniquity, then I think we can tie the two together. And so not that it's only something that the Fountain of Living Waters needs to take care of, but I think they will spearhead this effort, this human side of us. You know, the church in some ways hasn't been human. It's been just a stark organization, you know, without feelings. But now if you combine feelings, you bring life into it. And I can see that going forward, that the church is beginning to live again and to feel and to suffer, you know, and to, so I think if not, we don't do anything else but to make sure this never happens among us, then that to be at least a small first step. I mean, where you have children abandoned. Yes, sir.
I think also, like Mauricio has said, that more people from the LDS will join this movement, the Second Invitation. And as those people join, they'll be reading these verses and it'll touch more hearts and more people will adopt. I think it'll just maybe be a snowball, is my guess, that just, you know, we only see a little bit right now, but it could be huge eventually, make a big difference.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. So those are some great thoughts. I came in late, so, but I'm gathering what you guys have been talking about, and I saw Jeannie's email of the verses, and yeah, it can be very overwhelming and very discouraging, but at the same time, Bob, those things that you said are so profound, because I do feel like there is an awakening and we are starting to feel, you know, and we are starting to, as a society, there's just more awareness. So that awareness is both good and bad, but you know, I don't know if you guys mentioned this before because I came in, but you know, Tim Ballard has started the Underground Railroad organization. Are you guys familiar with that foundation that he started? He's LDS.
Yes.
And I actually
the movie. The
Sound of Freedom. Okay. Yeah. Have you guys? Did you guys have an opportunity to see that?
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't have an opportunity to see it, but that's been pretty powerful to see that, you know, he's working with the same organization that got the Chosen out there, right? And so, you know, so that awareness is becoming more and more. I actually met Tim Ballard. I put on a fireside years ago in Logan, and he was one of the speakers, and so I was able to meet him. And so it's encouraging to see that people like that are, you know, that have been faithful members of the LDS Church, and like Glenn Beck has put in like $30 million towards that same organization. And, you know, so I feel like Lisa too, I have the hope that that is eventually going to just snowball. And, you know, it's not per se just the church, it's society as a whole, you know, society as a whole, we have ignored all these things. I mean, Elon Musk did a study about 8 or 9 months ago, where he figured out we could feed the whole world with $6 billion. $6 billion, everyone could be fed in the world. But unfortunately, it's humanity. So we need to pray for the hearts of people to change, and ourselves, you know, to be able to make this these big changes. But I think it's just so important, like you said, Valera, just, you know, and Balkia, just to pray and keep our hearts in the right frame of mind and just have that hope that eventually we will be able to have a utopia, you know, eventually. You know, maybe that's what the millennia is going to be for. Thinking too, a lot of years to eradicate all these issues. It's been really interesting for me as I've worked for this nonprofit organization where we're trying to help solve the global sanitation crisis. And that right there is a huge, huge, overwhelming, you know, problem. But, you know, I get excited. Just this morning, I got a little thing that showed some pictures of these toilets that we're building for these 875 orphans in Africa, in Zambia. And, you know, now those kids are going to have a toilet and their teachers are going to have their own separate toilet. And so just these little things give me encouragement to know that there are good people out there and there is humanity still alive. And we just need to continue to just know that we just see so much, so many things on our own time frame and in the Lord's time frame. You know, we've only, you know, that this can be eradicated actually pretty fast in comparison to eternity, right? So, but thank you for all of your insights.
Okay, I was thinking of reading two more verses before we end. It kind of puts a responsibility on us, even though, anyway, in 83 and 84, I'll read them. Meanwhile, that a good part of the members of my church who live in the bosom of their family with much love and warmth in their homes, they completely ignore the reality of this issue. For the leadership itself, for they do not make this a priority as stipulated in my gospel to look after the orphans and widows in their tribulations. Denies to the Latter-day Saints the right to act in the dark world that surrounds them as true bearers of my brotherly love, the charity. And with that, many Latter-day Saints, without really knowing from who is the fault of it, exclaim, why does God allow there to be abandoned children? And explains to them the spiritualism message instead of the message from your general authorities that God allows there to be orphans to exhort you to serve as parents to them and complete this institution, much despised in your minds. What greater charity can there have beyond of that to support a poor abandoned creature and present suffering from hunger and cold, directing his soul so that it does not stray from the greater good to addiction and to the ills of the outside world? I'm not sure if I understood all those statements there. Some of them seemed a little bit hard to internalize, but I think the message is that we need to be careful and look to our own hearts and what we do and doing, so forth.
Yes, and I was also thinking that in the LDS Church, it's so much emphasis on your own family, you know, to be together as a family in the temple, and it's really important that you like Jeannie, you said that about adoption. You never heard about that in church, you know. Yeah, because they they have their reasons for it probably, but yeah, because the own family is so important, and I think it also closes your mind for the problems of the outside world, maybe. It's just a thought.
Thank you, Balkia. If we go back and think of the beginning of this section, or maybe it was the verse right before where it said the LDS, that the Lord was very much aware that the LDS built the mansions with money and all of that stuff that went with it, but that wasn't the point of his church, that his church was to, you know, take care of people, and we didn't do any of that. So definitely we need to, I liked also, Brother Bob, what you said about the feelings, if we open up our heart. But Satan has such a hold on a lot of a large group, because even from being a child to being an adult, if you've experienced that type of life, you you need, like, I don't know, more love or something. And the Lord's trying to tell us to open our arms to these people.
I want to make it a request for next week. I think we'll get to verse 89, where it talks about the religion of the Latter-day Saints is full of precepts and traditions extracted from Babylon, the mother of all harlots. I wonder if you could make a list in your mind. What did the church extract from Babylon? What's in the church now that came from Babylon? I think it'd be an interesting exercise. I started doing that and came up with about 10 things, and I don't know if they're necessarily correct, but that's just a start.
I will pass on that, to think about that. If you want to do it, but I'm not going to spend my energy on that, I think. I have some ideas, but yeah.
Well, I think one of the first ones is that there's one man, prophet, president, that has a connection with God, that he's the only one, that we have to look up to him. I think that's a Babylon perspective, that we don't have connection with God.
Well, it's good to think about, but but we know, but it's hard to, you cannot go to an LDS member and talk about this.
Yeah. But so, as we understand what those precepts are, we can recognize them. That's why the only reason to.
Yeah, true. That's important. So we can learn from it and not fall in the same trap. That's very good. Yes.
I have a list on my phone that of different precepts and things that I have to overcome, you know, from my LDS upbringing. I add to it every now and then, so I can see something in that.
Oh my goodness.
Just past traditions, you know, we gotta.
Yeah. No, book. I mean, it's good. I have to agree with Valkia in the sense that, like, I'm just trying really hard in my life not to focus on negative, because there's so much negative. But at the same time, what Russell said, you know, it is good for us to acknowledge it so that we can help eradicate that in ourselves. You know?
Okay. Did everybody freeze?
Or something.
Oh, they did freeze for a minute.
AA group or something. Oh, which, I mean, I don't mean to be light about that, because I know we have really deep discussions and I'm so grateful for it. But I'm just saying, in my own programming, in my own head, I'm just thinking, like, there's so many things that I need to relearn so that I can, you know, better myself to be more open to the right light and the right spirit, you know. So, yeah.
I think it would be good to know some of this stuff about Babylon. We're not going to just always be talking to members of the LDS Church or the Restored Church. And you're going to run into a lot of people that just believe Old Testament, New Testament, that's all there is. I'm not going to listen to anything else. And if you can, you can reflect with them on their background with, and everybody knows the destruction, that story about Jerusalem and Babylon. And I think it would be an opening for us to, I don't know, be closer. Because the first thing they want to do is just say, oh, you don't know anything about the Bible. If you can show those things and lead them to understand that these are not God's ways, and what was going on back then. I don't know, it's just a thought.
No, that's true. To like build on common beliefs, you know, to build on the common.
Sure.
If I might add three verses that came to mind, and I don't know exactly what they are, but and as much as ye have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Mm. You know, if you shall labor all your days and save, and you bring, save it be one soul unto me, how great shall be your joy in the kingdom of heaven. And what was the third one? One to those who offend these little ones, for it's greater that it would be better for them to have a millstone hung around their neck and round in the depths of the sea. I have to think that these children, they know coming into this life, they know, they probably have an idea of what it's going to be like, but they choose it regardless. Yes, it's hard when they're here because they don't understand. But I think in the end, Christ is going to make it all right. He will heal them, every whit. I have to believe that. When it all comes down to it, Christ will heal every one of us. I think that's the kind of the takeaway that I get from these verses. As hard as it is to see that going on in the world. And I think these movies, like you mentioned, Russell, The Sound of Freedom, and these other, I think Mel Gibson is working on one as well. I think the awareness that it brings to humanity, I think once we realize what's really happening and these crimes committed against the children, I think it will unite us. And I think once we know and we're aware of it, we can do something about eradicating it from society. And it may take the millennium, you know, as we begin the millennium to do it, but yeah, it's my two cents.
Amen.
Yeah, amen. Thank you for those scriptures. Thank you.
All right, I turn it back to you, Jeannie.
I'm gonna stop the recording.
Okay.